Hey friends, this is Michael Bohm with Youth Apologetics Training, soon to be Answer Ready Ministries. Today we're going to bring you another installment of this interview with Sandra Tanner. Again, Sandra Tanner of Utah Lighthouse Ministries. Her website is utlm.org. She's kind of, her website is like the one-stop shop for everything Mormonism. She pretty much knows the faith inside and out. Now, if you missed the first part of this series, she has come out of Mormonism quite a long time ago, and she's written over 40 books, or taken part in writing over 40 different books on Mormonism, examining the faith closely and critically, and helping Mormons come out of Mormonism and into the true faith in Jesus Christ and His Word. And so anyway, yesterday we started talking about the Book of Mormon. We covered a great many things I thought was interesting. Joseph Smith, he actually found this magic stone while digging a well, right? And he throws it in a hat. And that's how, well, at first he was using it to locate treasures, this like peepstone thing, okay? And later on, when he starts trying to interpret this Book of Mormon, this reformed Egyptian, he throws this stone into a hat, and he's peering into a hat, and he's interpreting the reformed Egyptian by looking at the stone in a hat. Now, all the Mormon pictures depict him actually poring over these golden plates. But that's not at all what happened. Another thing I found interesting in this first part of the interview is that turns out nobody actually physically saw the golden plates. We've got these different testimonies that the Mormons always point to, but they're all visionary experiences. It's not like they actually saw in person, physically, the plates, let alone touch them, all right? And so I thought that was kind of interesting as well. Now, today we're going to start looking at, digging a little deeper into this Book of Mormon. I want you guys to get a more full feeling of what this is so that when Mormons come to your door, you'll have a little more to talk about. And, well, by the end of this series, we're going to actually look at some of the ways that Sandra has had success witnessing the Mormons. And friends, she has taken part in leading hordes of Mormons out of their faith and into the true faith. For by grace are ye saved through faith, and that not of yourselves, it is the gift of God, not of works, lest any man should boast. That's Ephesians 2, verses 8 through 9. So anyway, with that, let's go ahead and continue on with this interview with the great Sandra Tanner. Friends, if you're Mormon, welcome. We love you guys. I apologize if I'm laughing. I don't mean to come off abrasive in any sense, but it is awkward. For example, you know, when we I was talking to Sandra before the interview, and one of the things I found fascinating and kind of a little humorous when I'm reading through the Book of Mormon is the use of "it came to pass." It's as if the writer was fascinated with the King James English and your 1611 King James Bible. There's a lot of King James isms throughout the Book of Mormon. And as you're reading through over and over and over ad nauseum, you find "it came to pass, it came to pass, it came to pass," which always kind of struck me as funny. I guess on that note, in the Book of Mormon, there are some flat out copied texts from the King James Version, which is a little interesting, being that the Book of Mormon was written when again, Sandra?
Well, the main group of peoples in the Book of Mormon, their story is 600 BC to 400 AD. So you have a 1,000-year history of these people that are supposed to be Jewish people from Israel that have come to America and started a new civilization. And the Book of Mormon is worded in King James style language, these and thous. And so this "it came to pass" is a biblical phrase, but it's used sparingly. In the Book of Mormon, it's used as a filler, it seems, all the time in going from one concept to the next. And it came to pass, they figured out this, that, or the other. And it's just used so repetitiously that it becomes a little humorous. And actually, there would have been more of those and it came to pass in the first edition than there is now. So even the ones you see now aren't the full total of them.
Right, right. Now, you mentioned the first edition of the Book of Mormon. Are there any differences between the first edition and what we have today?
There are, there's been over 4,000 changes in the wording in the Book of Mormon. Now, most of those changes would not affect any doctrinal or historical issue. Most of them are just grammar and spelling things, mostly grammar changes, which I think is odd when you think of the Book of Mormon coming through this divine process, supposedly, of Joseph looking at this stone and God giving him the words as the translation. And so that would seem to indicate the bad grammar was God's. Well, they've gone back and corrected a lot of that bad grammar. But there are several places that actually affect the story. And there are like four places where they've added in a phrase that changes the view of the Godhead. Because originally there was a place that prophesied of Christ where it said, told of Mary would be the mother of the Messiah, and that she would be the mother of God. And that later was amended to say the mother of the Son of God. And there are several places where this phrase, the Son of, has been added in, where the verse originally was speaking of God himself, and now it says the Son of God. So it changes the theology of who's speaking and who it's referring to from going from the Father to the Son. There's also a couple of places where they change the name of the king, where it changes between Benjamin and Mosiah, Benjamin being the first king and Mosiah being the second one. And there are times when Joseph Smith got the two names mixed up. And so you, chronologically, you would have the wrong king mentioned at the time. So they had to go back and change the name of the king a couple of places to make it fit. So it'd be kind of like reading, if you were writing a story of the inaugural address in a particular year of a president, and instead of saying the new president, you say the old president. And so you would surely know who the guy was, and the fact that they get the kings mixed up says to me it wasn't a historical record. It was Joseph Smith just forgetting how he told the story.
Mm. Now, don't you and Gerald have a book on this subject? By the way, friends, their website is utlm.org. That's like Utah Lighthouse Ministries.org, utlm.org. They have a bookstore on the website, and they carry all of the books they've written, and I believe there's others as well, right?
Yes, we have books by a number of different authors, but we have a book that we did called 3,913 Changes in the Book of Mormon, which is a photo reprint of the 1830 first edition Book of Mormon, where we have made notes of all of the changes that they've made to show you how they've added words in and changed chronology and things like that. So these are all things that can be researched. I don't ask anyone to just take my word for it. We have spent the last 50-plus years documenting all these problems in Mormonism and have listed them all on our website. And if people would just check into the history of Mormonism, they'd see it. It's clearly man-made. The Book of Mormon doesn't meet any of the evidences that you could list for the Bible. The Bible has all kind of manuscripts. The Book of Mormon has none. The Bible, we have cities. We have people groups. We have artifacts. We have all sorts of things that show the Bible is a record of actual people in real time. But in the Book of Mormon, you have nothing that identifies any group of people that ever existed with any artifact or any writing sample. So there's nothing to verify the Bible, I mean the Book of Mormon, like there is the evidences we have for the Bible. It just all appears from Joseph Smith. There's nothing that predates him to tie it to these people.
Right. You know, on that note, we have in the Book of Mormon, we have these huge battles involving sometimes millions of people, correct?
Yes, that would be the battles of the Jaredites, the first group that comes over after the time of the Tower of Babel. And they have this huge war at the Hill Cumorah, which Joseph Smith said was in upper state New York. And then the next civilization that grows up here in America, the Nephites and Lamanites in the 600 B.C. to 400 A.D. time period, they end up having their great last battle at the same hill, the Hill Cumorah, where tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people get slaughtered, and just leaving the bad guys who then are supposedly the ancestors of the American Indian. And so the Book of Mormon originally was presented to the world as the answer to where did the American Indian come from. This was a popular question of the day. So the Book of Mormon filled a void of trying to explain to people who were the American inhabitants. When Columbus got here, there's already people. Who are these Indians and where did they come from? So the Book of Mormon sought to answer this by saying, oh, they're Israelites that came over here at 600 B.C., but they all killed each other off at Hill Cumorah, and it just left what we know of the American Indian.
Right. So we have these huge battles. We have all of these different various cities that are mentioned in the Book of Mormon, all these different civilizations. We have mentions of various animals like cattle, horses, donkeys, oxen, sheep, goats, pigs, elephants. We have wheat, steel, brass, chains, iron, scimitars, chariots. We've got all of these things that are mentioned. Temples being built in the Book of Mormon. Have we found anything to validate any of it?
No, there is nothing that can be tied into the Book of Mormon peoples. And the animal and plant life and the metallurgy are all foreign to what we know of the Americas during the time period the Book of Mormon's covering. Those things were just not here. Supposedly these immigrants that came over here brought horses and cows with them, but there were no horses and cows here during the Book of Mormon time period. Archaeologists don't see anything for this. The Book of Mormon people supposedly had chariots pulled by horses that they went into battle with steel swords. And historians of the Americas will tell you, no, none of that could have happened. The Indians did not have those animals or the sophistication of the wheel. They're just, they had no cart. There was no knowledge of the wheel as something that would pull a vehicle. I mean, you know, that you could put your load of hay on or something and have a horse or cow or something pull it. They're just, they didn't have any beast of burden. There was no beast of burden in the Americas to qualify for this. Now, if the Mormons are wanting to tie into the Mayan civilization, which they often do, to prove an advanced civilization in the Americas, sometimes people will say, well, what about the buffalo? Well, those buffaloes are up in Nebraska. They aren't down in Guatemala. In the Book of Mormon areas, the areas the Mormons want to try to say were Book of Mormon lands, there's no beast of burden of any kind. They have a deer and a tapir as their larger animals in that area, but none of them could be hooked up to a chariot. So the whole way of life that's portrayed in the Book of Mormon is out of sync for the area that they're claiming for Book of Mormon lands.
Right, right. You know, we're supposed to believe that these are Jews.
Right.
Who have come over here and brought their culture with us. Can we see anything in the various cultures that we find in the Americas that might suggest Jewish influence, anything at all that might maybe some Reformed Egyptian writings that have been found, any Egyptian writings that have been found, anything along that track?
No, there's there have been, through the years, there have been a few claims of finding of Hebrew or Phoenician writing here in the Americas, but they've turned out to be hoaxes. The anthropologists that study American history don't see any connection between the Book of Mormon peoples, their lifestyle, their riding habits, their animals, and or any of those things. They don't see any correlation with the Book of Mormon stuff with actual Indian artifacts or mounds. There's no similarity between the two. And the American Indians' languages don't have a base that could be traced back to Hebrew, because these are Jews. Supposedly they're speaking Hebrew, but writing their records in Reformed Egyptian, because the Book of Mormon talks about them speaking the language of their fathers, which would have been Hebrew. And so there's the base of the languages does not show any connection back to Hebrew.
What about coins? The Book of Mormon talks about coins being used, various types of currencies. Have we found anything along those lines?
Well, the Mormons, realizing that there was a problem with the money system used in the Book of Mormon, have tried to minimize that by changing the headings in the Book of Mormon, where it used to label a particular chapter in the Book of Mormon as discussing Nephite coins. They've now changed the heading of the chapter to where it just says Nephite monetary system, because it goes through and talks about their different weights of gold and silver pieces and how many silver pieces it took to make equal a gold piece. And so they want to say, well, that doesn't have to mean it's coins. Well, the whole problem is the Indians never used gold and silver as currency. They didn't see them as money. The Indians in both North and South America always used a barter system. They traded in cocoa beans, in jade, in quetzal feathers, in shells, and, you know, they had different things like that they would trade for, but not for silver and gold. That did not have a meaning to them as a monetary value. So when an anthropologist looks in the Book of Mormon, it talks about their different pieces of silver and gold that they used in trade and how much you could get for a day's wage and stuff in gold and silver. They're saying, the anthropologists are saying, this is unheard of in the Americas. They didn't view gold in that way as a means of money.
All right, so we've gone a little bit farther. We've gone a little bit past the 15-minute mark, and that's okay. So what we're seeing now is that this Book of Mormon is definitely a creation of man. It's not a creation of God. And it's interesting too, because when a Mormon comes to your door, they'll often tell you that the Book of Mormon is the most correct book on earth. And yet it's had over 4,000 changes. Now, like Sandra said earlier today, most of these changes are not major. They're spellings of names and things like that. Some of them, though, are major. And we're talking about the most correct book on earth, friends. I mean, clearly it's not the most correct book on earth. I think one of the more convincing things for me, as far as showing that this is all bunk, I mean, it's all just a made-up story, is the history, the archaeology. Here we have the stories that play out in the Bible. Okay, some of these stories played out, many of them just 2,000 years ago. Many of them are thousands of years, more than that, okay, at least 3,000 years for some of these stories. And we're finding the towns, we're finding extra-biblical writings from the area confirming that these stories took place. We're finding the currencies. We're finding tons of archaeology to confirm that this, in fact, is the truth. Well, here in the Americas, supposedly all these events took place in the Book of Mormon. They all took place right here. We've got these humongous, ginormous battles taking place on the Hill Cumorah, and nothing, not a sword, not a shield, not a chariot, not a nothing, okay? All these currencies that are mentioned in the Book of Mormon, these huge civilizations, all these towns, all these temples that were built, we're talking about massive Jewish culture. It should be present everywhere you look, not just an obscure Bat Creek Stone or Stella Number 5, which, well, they're not going to help your cause either. But not just a couple obscure things. We're talking we should have piles and piles and piles and piles. And when I bring this up to Mormons, they say, well, we got to believe in faith. No, friends. No, no, no. We trust in Christ in faith, okay? By faith are ye saved through grace, and that not of yourselves. It is the gift of works. It is the gift of God, not of works, lest any man should boast. That's what we have faith in, and we can trust in that faith, okay? Christianity is built upon real life situations and stories. These are real events that took place historically. They happened. The Book of Mormon, friends, it's a fiction. It's a fiction. It really is. And we need to trust in Christ, the real God-man who came to earth, fully God, fully man, lived a sinless life. And it wasn't the blood he shed in the Garden of Gethsemane. No, this is the Christ that, just like the Old Testament sacrifices, he went as a lamb to the slaughter, willingly giving his life in place for us that we might be forgiven. Guys, it matches the entire Old Testament sacrificial system. It all matches up. It has nothing to do with Mormonism. When you look at the Bible, friends, if you are Mormons, I urge you, I beg you, just read the New Testament. Just read it over a few times. And I ask you this, is Mormonism in there? Is there even the slightest hint of Mormonism in there? Read it again. Some of you are thinking, well, I've already read it. Read it again. Check it out. All right. We don't read the New Testament and then ask God and look for some burning in our bosom. That was a creation of Joseph Smith. No, we just read it. Look at its factual, historical nature. And we can go back and we can see all these towns and that they still exist. Many of them. This is a faith that's built on facts. You can trust in it. You don't have to be embarrassed by it. Okay? So anyway, I'll stop right there, friends. Hey, I just threw up a... Oh boy, I shouldn't have said it that way. I just put up a email opt-in form on my website, both websites, Youth Apologetics Training and my ghetto website, Answer Ready Ministries. I'm building on it. I'm working on it, okay? And this email opt-in form, if you would like, and I would love you to opt in, to receive updates only once a week. I'm not going to spam you, and I'm not going to push all kinds of salesy stuff on you guys. You know that. But giving you updates on articles I write, and weekly letting you know about podcasts I've thrown up, and also I'm going to throw in some other content to make it worth your while, just to keep you guys abreast of what's going on. So anyway, yeah, please join up to that if you haven't yet already. And with that, friends, I love you guys, and tomorrow, I'll see you tomorrow. Take care.